Okay. Thanks very much for inviting me. I'm here on behalf of half of a network of cities called the Smart Cities Network. Not a very particularly astounding name. And over the past 3 years, we've been working very hard at a policy level to try and get the people who make decisions in cities interested in your agenda. That's politicians and city managers understanding what technology might be able to do for them. But more recently, we've discovered we should have been spending just as much time talking to innovators and the research community about how cities work, because we're not sure they really understand it. So this is an attempt, really, to use the mobility example just to give you an insight into some of the thinking that we've been doing. First of all, smart city. We've adopted it, but what the hell is it? Is it brand? Is it a place you go and stay in Edinburgh? Smart city hostels? Is it something to convince your kids to eat more healthy food? So it's something which doesn't simply work on its own. There's a context for all this, and we have to be clear about that. One of the most interesting ways to be clear about that, it's a very contested context. Fantastic report funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, the Institute of the Future, has to be based in California, of course, but what I'd love to be able to say, hey, I work for the Institute for the Future. But this is one of the best reports we've seen in a long, long time. It really does go to the heart of trying to understand what this agenda would be like if it were really created by users and citizens. And the reasons it's contested, as this report talks about very interestingly, is are we going to have genetically modified cities or are we going to have open cities? And by that, what they mean is, they're very critical, what they call technology corporations, smart city in a box solutions. What they mean is, are we going to have something that is licensed, every time you want to change it, you apply to change the license, and it talks about, there's seen some really interesting applications coming out as open systems, trademark. So proprietary solutions which aren't as open or as accessible as they need to be. And this report really goes to the heart of that debate in a great way. There's quite some interesting press and media articles which you can look up through search, should you like to. So what are we actually doing? Just a bit of boring stuff. First, we are trying to create some real synergy between city decision makers, the Living Labs innovation community, and the Future Internet research community, to try and make sure we just try and understand each other a little bit more clearly. There are some very interesting initiatives in this area being actually funded by the Commission. The Commission are funding a group of seven projects through the Competitiveness Innovation Programme. And in each of the contracts, it actually says that those seven will work together and they'll develop a common framework. That's a big change from normally probably in the last 3 months of your project, you discover that somebody's been doing exactly the same thing. But this time, we're having that information up front and exchanged and developed. There's also a coordination action for Framework 7 projects called Fireball. We've also now, looking at the sustainability of ICT, just doing the final negotiations for a project called the Green Digital Charter. And there's a number of websites, so obviously this will be available. I'm not going to go through all of these. But what are the core principles that we've been talking about in cities? The core principles that politicians, city managers, intermediary organisations, we've been talking to a lot of people in the NGO community who, let's be honest, are not exactly very well engaged in this debate yet. And those intermediary organisations are probably the nearest we get to citizens. It's a very utopian idea, which some of us do actually support, that citizens might be involved directly. But perhaps organisations which directly represent citizens in the NGO community is a good start. So, first three things probably take for granted, but users as producers. Big challenge, and I know this is probably more long-term and conceptual, but okay, you have a card which is for the citizen, and it's great because you can do lots of things. But can you program it? Do you actually give the skills to citizens to be able to program their own cards? Do governments say, in terms of governance terms, or we act as our caretakers of the data, and so the citizen actually owns that data, and we're going to give them an open programmable card with the skills to do it, and they can program whatever information they like, and maybe that has to be checked and validated in some way. No, that's not really what's being talked about at all, except in a very tiny minority of situations. So we want to raise that idea that maybe citizens, some of the development in wearable technologies, for example, offer some very interesting opportunities for citizens to be sensors themselves. And of course, in the last scientific revolution, or certainly in the 19th century scientific revolution, citizens played a big role. Self-taught autodidacts who had little measuring machines in their back gardens or on the top of their roofs played a huge role in creating scientific data and scientific knowledge. And we need to kind of think about that just a little bit in terms of how we empower people. So the two key things we're looking at, how do you build the social capital of users? How do you build their understanding? How do you build their skills? But more importantly, how do you build their confidence and their aspirations that they might actually want to do something about this? And that needs some very innovative business models and some really interesting discussions going on with people who run social economy enterprises about the idea of kind of future internet cooperatives, open source type models, which are very early stages. One of the problems we have with really separating anything out, though, is this. We tried to do something for within our network, Eurocities, for politicians, that encapsulated an image why it's quite difficult just to do this, even though you might be practically right to start with that, because it's something that has an impact on so many people. Because until you've actually got all that open data and open innovation across the domains involved, then actually, how does it help to tell me how long I'm going to spend on the bus if there's not a smart work centre I can go to instead? How does it help me if my kid's off ill and there's not a smart education system that allows them to do something at home or somewhere locally, perhaps where they can be cared for temporarily while I have to go to work? So the interconnectivity of all that is absolutely crucial if we're going to get people bought in. But let's look at mobility. We've had a number of thematic groups within the cities who are involved in this. Sorry, just to put it in context, the five core cities who are involved in the Fireball project are ourselves, Amsterdam, Helsinki, Barcelona and Lisbon. There's about another 10 cities from the 150-plus cities who are members of Eurocities, which tends to be the larger cities of Europe, that are now involved in that. And our aim is probably to get, at the end of the two-year period through which we've got some direct support from the Commission to this, about 50 cities collaborating. And what we would love is a kind of matchmaking agency at that time where the research community, the industrial community, and the cities can have a look about what is on offer, what can be done. If you want to test something, do you want an open door so you don't have to wait 6 months to get approval from the mayor's office? Is there some kind of way that we can matchmake the needs of the cities with the opportunities that the future internet community can bring to that through the processes like Living Labs? So these are some of the key things that have come out of the consultation theme around mobility. Number one, movement needs to be easy and understandable. The impacts of what we're planning should be very low on the environmental scale. We may have to regulate access to the densest urban environments. Nothing to do with technology. I mean, in planning terms, we started to pedestrianise large areas of our cities 40 or 50 years ago. But it is controversial. Just to give you an example, London congestion charge is held up everywhere except Britain as a fantastic example of best practice. In Britain, we tried to do the same in Manchester because we thought it is. We still think it's great. And we put it to a popular vote. 90% of the population voted no. 10% yes. In spite of all the benefits. Sometimes to get consent has to be ultra-informed, not just informed. You have to really go out and engage. That's what I mean about this being contested. It's not easy to win some of these things. So regulating access, regulating movement is a very controversial thing. Clearly, a lot of the work you've already talked about integration, about optimising travel time and so on, is going to be crucial. But there's some really interesting initiatives going on across Europe where not only public transport users, but also private car users are being given opportunities to think about designing real-time information systems that help everyone else. The problem is, up until now, we've had a smart X or a smart Y, and very few of those things have looked at some of the more innovative business cases to make them, the last line, sustainable, replicable, and scalable. And they tend to stay very experimental, and we want to change that. There's some great examples, particularly on the kind of open data web access area, of people really beginning to develop. some of these solutions. And more on the Internet of Things, there's some great stuff that's come out of the European collaboration with MIT about smart environments and smart, very user-friendly, literally touch-friendly applications that could begin to create that ultra-informed consent. Because people do quite like toys, providing those toys have got some practical use in this kind of environment. So creating something that's attractive, fun to use, creates a buzz, creates a different kind of vibe, is very interestingly designed in the urban context. That those are the kinds of things we want to begin to see coming out of this collaboration. In terms of what we're doing, the Fireball project will act as a kind of portal for this. Gradually stuff will be going on that over the summer. There's not an awful lot there at the moment, but some of the first results of the collaboration between the five core cities is already up there with links. But we'd really hope that you'll, as a more wide Internet of Things, that you'll engage with that, and we'll get this kind of three-way dialogue between the research community, the Living Lab community, and the people who actually control the cities. Because unless their behaviour is changed very fundamentally, including the people who employ me, then it doesn't matter what wonderful future internet or open innovation things, they're not going to be applied very widely. Okay, thanks very much.